Welcome back to the Deep Dive. So today we're doing something a little different.
Oh, yeah.
Usually, we look at a topic from, 10,000 feet, trends, big ideas, that sort of thing.
And the macro view.
Exactly. But today I want to zoom way, way in on a specific gear in the global machine that is, it's currently broken. We're talking about supply
And I
chains.
can hear people clicking away already. Supply chains. Ugh, really?
I know, I know. It sounds like the most boring logistics meeting of all time. But stick with me here because the documents we're looking at today, specifically research from Agridot Energy on their split ledger architecture, they're not really about moving boxes. They're about lying.
That's a very direct way to put it.
Well, isn't it? The core problem the source material identifies is what they call a crisis of trust. We've built this massive global network for trade, but nobody actually believes the data anymore. Buyers don't trust producers, regulators don't trust the banks, and you, the consumer, you definitely don't trust the organic sticker on your apple.
That is the reality. And the reason isn't always, malice. It's structural. If you look at the current state of things, we have a total deadlock.
How so?
On one side, you've got buyers demanding proof. Proof of quality, proof of origin. But on the other, you have producers, especially small farmers in places like Uganda or even rural America, who just can't afford to prove it.
Right, because proving it usually means paying a guy in a suit to fly out and, inspect the farm?
Exactly. Third-party audits are incredibly expensive. They can eat up the entire profit margin for a small operation. So the farmer is forced to just self-report. They say, "Trust me, it's grade
And
A."
the buyer says, "Yeah, right."
And the trade stalls, or the price collapses because of all that risk.
So that's the commerce side of the problem. But the notes we have highlight a second layer to this crisis that feels even, I don't know, messier. They call it a regulatory
Oh,
paradox.
it's a classic catch-22.
Reading through it, it sounds like a nightmare legal trap.
It is. It's what happens when two different, very powerful branches of government want completely opposite things.
Okay, let's unpack that. Who are the two sides here?
Well, in the red corner, you have the financial regulators. Think the SEC, the CFTC, all the global banking standards. They are obsessed with KYC and AML, know your customer, and anti-money laundering. If you want to turn a physical crop into a digital asset, say tokenizing a harvest to get a loan, these regulators demand to know who you are.
They need names,
Okay.
tax IDs.
They need to know exactly who you are.
That makes sense. They don't want terrorists funding operations with, hemp sales.
Right. But then in the blue corner, you have the privacy regulators, GDPR in Europe, CCPA in California. And they have a very, very strict rule. You cannot put personally identifiable information, PII, on a public blockchain.
Because of the blockchain is immutable. You can't
You
just.
can't delete it.
Right. So if I put your name and your home address on Bitcoin or Ethereum, it is there forever.
And under GDPR, that's a crime because you have the right to be forgotten. So you see the trap. If you comply with the SEC, you break GDPR. If you comply with GDPR, you break SEC rules.
So you're damned if you do, and you're sued if you don't.
That's the paralysis. You cannot have a single public ledger that satisfies both of them. It's just chemically impossible.
Okay, so enter Agridot Energy. They propose this solution they call split ledger architecture. And they use a metaphor that I actually found really helpful to visualize this. They call it the bank versus the library.
It's the central mental model for this entire system. Instead of trying to cram everything into one database, they split reality into two completely distinct layers.
All right, let's start with the bank. This is the private ledger, right?
Yes. In their tech stack, this layer is powered by a technology called Horizon. You should really think of the bank as a vault. It's permission. Not just anyone can walk in and start looking at the files.
So this is where all the dangerous stuff lives.
Correct. This is where you store the farmer's identity. We're talking legal names, tax IDs, even biometric data. It also holds the wallet addresses for all the money transfers.
All the stuff that gets you in massive trouble with GDPR if it leaks.
Precisely. The whole goal of the bank is just regulatory compliance. It's a safe harbor. It lets regulators audit the flow of money, make sure there's no dark money coming in, but it keeps that data completely walled off from the general public.
So the regulators are happy. But if I'm a buyer in London, I don't have the keys to the bank. I can't see who the farmer is. So how do I know the crop isn't just, garbage?
And that brings us to the library. This is the public ledger. And this uses a completely different technology called Freenet. Sometimes you'll see it referred to as Locutus in the documentation.
And this one is open to everyone.
Yes, it's an immutable, decentralized registry. It uses WebAssembly smart contracts. But the key thing to really get about Freenet is that it is content addressable.
Okay, hang on. Content addressable is one of those tech buzzwords that usually makes my eyes glaze over. What does that actually mean for a normal person?
Okay, think of the internet as you know it today. It's location-based. If you want a file, you go to a specific server, like google.com/file. If Google's server goes down, or if they just decide to delete that file.
It's gone.
You get a broken link. Freenet is different. It's like searching for a book, not by its shelf number, but by a specific quote from inside it.
Okay.
So as long as someone anywhere in the entire network has a copy of that file, you can retrieve it. It doesn't rely on a central server. This creates what they call sovereign permanence.
So even if the company, Agridot Energy, goes bankrupt tomorrow and shuts down their offices, the data about the crops is still there.
Exactly. It survives the company that created it.
So what exactly is sitting on the shelves of this library?
The public hemp certificate. And this is purely data about the physical object, not the person. We're talking moisture content, stalk diameter, fiber grade, chemical composition, and all the evidence hashes of computer vision scans, sensor logs.
And location, right, the provenance of the crop.
Yes, but this is where they make a really specific and I think very smart design choice. They use a GPS geohash, but they intentionally blur it to a 10-kilometer radius.
Wait, hold on. Doesn't that sort of defeat the purpose? If I'm buying single origin coffee or some premium hemp, I want to know the exact hillside it came from. Telling me it came from somewhere within this 10-kilometer circle feels like they're hiding something.
It feels that way at first, until you consider the physical security of the farmer. In many parts of the world, like the regions in Uganda they mentioned in the case study, if you publish the exact meter-perfect GPS location of a high-value harvest right next to a crypto wallet address,
you're just painting a giant target on their back.
You're effectively doxing them to local cartels or thieves. You're saying, here is the gold and here is where the money is. The 10-kilometer radius proves the climate in the region, which matters for the crop's quality, without giving kidnappers a roadmap to the front gate.
Okay, I take it back. That's actually a really thoughtful safety feature. But yeah. I want to push on something else. The source material makes a really big deal about cost. Why use Freenet? Why not just put this data on Ethereum or Solana? I mean, everyone knows those names.
This is a huge issue that usually kills these kinds of supply chain projects. Blockchains like Ethereum are essentially bidding wars. You are competing for block space against everyone else in the world. People trading meme coins, people buying NFTs, high-frequency traders.
So the rent is high.
It's astronomical for data. To store a single high-resolution image of a crop inspection on Ethereum, you might pay $50, maybe even $100 in gas fees.
Wow.
Now imagine you have 10,000 bales of hay to certify. You are bankrupt before breakfast.
And Freenet.
Freenet is designed specifically for storage. It allows for heavy sensor logs, images, big data sets at effectively zero marginal cost. It makes the business model actually work.
Okay, so we have the bank for the secrets and the library for the truth. That sounds great on paper. But I have a major, major skepticism here.
Which is?
The garbage in, garbage out problem.
Yeah.
You can have the most secure, military-grade blockchain in the world. But if the farmer just walks up to the computer and types in, this is grade A, when it's really grade C, the blockchain just secures the lie. It doesn't make it true. It just makes the lie permanent.
You've just hit on the Oracle problem. How do you bridge the physical world to the digital world without a human messing with it? Agra's answer is that you have to remove the human from the reporting process entirely.
You automate the truth.
You build a hardware oracle. And in this system, that's the iOS Tier 2 node. And they use this great metaphor called the Trinity Stack to explain how it works. The eye, the hand, and the memory.
Okay, let's break down the eye. This isn't just a camera, right?
No, not at all. It's an NVIDIA A2 Tensor Core GPU running a custom computer vision model they call YOLOv8.
YOLOv8 sounds like the strategy for my 20s, but I'm assuming it means something technical here.
It does. It stands for You Only Look Once. It's a real-time object detection system. So imagine a conveyor belt. The crop is moving past it. This GPU is watching. Mm-hmm. It's analyzing texture, color, density. It makes an inference, a decision right there on the edge. This is grade A hemp.
And it just guesses. What if the lighting is bad or something?
It assigns a confidence score. So if the machine is only, say, 40% sure, it just rejects the data. It has to hit a really high threshold, like 98% to pass.
Okay, so the eye sees it. Then comes the hand.
The hand is the middleware. Specifically, it's a service called Hemp Grade Publisher, which is written in Rust. Its whole job is sanitization. It takes the data from the eye and scrubs it clean.
What do you mean by scrubs it?
It makes sure that absolutely no PII, no stray faces in the background of a photo, no metadata about the farmer gets passed to the public layer. It then hands the safe data over to the correct ledger.
And the memory, I'm guessing, is FreeNet, where it lives forever.
Correct.
Let's use this specific example in the notes because it really grounds this whole thing. They talk about Nodo4 in Kabong, Uganda. Can you walk us through the life of a harvest there?
Sure. So a person they identify as Harmer 555 brings in 500 kilograms of biomass. It gets dumped onto the intake belt. The Rios node is sitting there, just humming away. The eye scans the flow. It determines grade A, confidence, 0.98.
Does the farmer have to type anything?
Nope. The farmer just delivers the crop. The machine itself does the signing. It cryptographically stamps that data with its own unique key. Then the split happens.
The bank and the library.
The hemp-grade publisher sends a signal to the Horizon Bank saying, Farmer 555 delivered 500 kilograms, release the payment to his wallet. At the exact same millisecond, it sends a signal to the FreeNet library saying, Batch UUID 1234 is grade A, verified by node 4.
So the money moves privately and the reputation moves publicly.
Exactly. And when that buyer in London eventually scans the QR code on the bale, they see that record in the library. They don't need to call a farmer. They don't need to trust the farmer. They trust the node.
But, and here's my next challenge, why do I trust the node? If I'm a clever hacker or maybe a corrupt warehouse manager, why don't I just hack the box or swap out the sensor to make it say whatever I want?
That is the root of trust question, and this is where we get deep into the hardware security. It all relies on a little component called the TPM 2.0, the Trusted Platform Module.
I've heard of TPMs. I think Windows 11 made a big fuss about requiring them.
Mm-hmm.
But what does it actually do?
It provides a hardware-based identity. So when that Rios node is manufactured, a unique cryptographic key is burned directly into the silicon of that chip. It cannot be exported. You can't put it on a USB drive. You can't email it. The key is the chip.
So when that data arrives in the library, it's not signed by a password someone typed in. It's signed by the physical machine itself.
Yes. The signature proves that the hardware physically witnessed the crop. It proves presence. It replaces the honesty of an operator with the physics of the silicon.
But hardware is fragile. You're talking about Uganda, rural Arizona.
Sure.
Places with dust, heat, unstable power grids. If this is some delicate server rack, it's just going to melt in a week.
The documentation makes this really interesting distinction between what they call linear fragility and sovereign resilience. The old world of IT is built on these fragile chains. You need a climate-controlled room, perfectly stable voltage, fiber-optic cables. If the AC breaks...
the whole thing dies.
The server dies. The Arayo CC1000 Sovereign Compute Cluster is built for what they call kinetic environments.
Kinetic is a very polite way of saying chaotic.
It means heat, ash, vibration, bugs, grid failure, all of it. They describe a physical bubble approach, or the watchtower protocol. The machine is designed to be autonomous. It's hardened. It doesn't rely on the grid being perfect. It's more like a tank than a web server.
The Cybertruck of supply chain nodes.
Hopefully with better manufacturing tolerances, but yes. The philosophy is that the infrastructure has to be as tough as the environment it's actually operating in.
I have one more question about the data. We talked about immutability. You can't delete anything. But machines make mistakes. Sensors drift. Lenses get dirty. If the eye says something is grade A, but it's really grade B, and that gets written to the permanent ledger, are we stuck with a lie forever?
This is a really profound point, and the solution they use is called correction logic. And it's a bit of a philosophical shift from how we usually handle data.
Oh, so?
In a normal corporate database, if an admin makes a mistake, they just go in, delete the wrong number, and type in the right one. The error just vanishes. It's like it never happened.
Right. A clean slate.
In this architecture, you cannot delete. The error is immortalized. To fix it, the system appends a correction record. But, and this is the key, it requires a dual signature. The Rios node has to sign it, and a human admin has to sign it.
So you have to publicly admit that a mistake was made.
You have to own it. The history will show original entry, grade A, then below it, correction entry, grade B, reason, sensor calibration error. It creates a permanent audit trail of fallibility.
That sounds absolutely terrifying for a company.
It is, but it forces a culture of extreme competence. If you know that every one of your mistakes will be visible to the entire world forever, you get very, very good at not making mistakes. It actually builds more trust because it's transparent about its own imperfections.
So let's zoom back out. We've been talking about hemp and farmers in Uganda. But as I'm listening to this, I'm thinking, this isn't really about hemp, is it?
Not at all. Hemp is just the sandbox. It's the test case because it's a difficult, high compliance crop. But you can apply this logic to literally anything.
Pharmaceuticals.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Pfizer shipping vaccines. You need to prove the temperature never went above a certain degree for the entire journey. Or luxury goods. How do you know that Louis Vuitton DAG is real?
Or conflicts minerals.
Exactly. How do you prove that the cobalt in your phone didn't come from a child labor mine?
If you can mathematically prove the history of a physical object without trusting a human middleman,
you change the entire global economy. You move from a model of trust branding, where you just trust a logo, to a model of trusting verification.
Let's break down the so what for the different players one last time. For the farmer.
For the farmer, it's data sovereignty. They finally own their own history. If they have 5 years of verified grade A data sitting in the library, they can take that record to a bank and get a much better loan. Their reputation becomes a tangible asset that no one can ever take away or delete.
And for the regulator.
They get what they've always wanted, a perfect, clear audit trail for money laundering, but without having to trample all over privacy laws.
It really feels like we are watching this transition from the cloud era, where we all just rent space on someone else's computer, to this sovereign stack era.
I think that's exactly the right way to frame it. The crisis of trust won't be solved by more clipboards or more promises from CEOs on TV. It'll be solved by architecture, by code, and by hardware that, by its very nature, doesn't allow for lying.
It's a fascinating, if maybe slightly intense, vision of the future.
And if I can leave you with just one final, slightly provocative thought on that.
Please.
Think about the era we're entering right now with AI. Deepfakes. Voice synthesis. We are very rapidly approaching a point where you cannot trust your own eyes or ears online. You can fake a video of a person. You can fake a PDF. You can fake an entire identity.
Right. The digital world is becoming a hall of mirrors.
So in that world, the only thing you might actually be able to trust is the physical, cryptographic signature of a dedicated hardware chip. We may be moving to a world where truth isn't about who said something, but about what piece of hardware physically witnessed it.
The future of truth is hardware. That is, yeah. Wow. That is something I'm going to be thinking about for a long time.
It might be the only anchor we have left.
On that cheery but definitely mind-expanding note, we are going to wrap it up. This has been a deep dive into the split ledger and the sovereign stack. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one.